How often should you self-check your breast? And what should you look for? Is breast cancer preventable? Sydney Chris O'Brien Lifehouse breast surgeon, Associate Professor Dr. Sanjay Warrior spoke with Selvi on SBS Tamil program about breast cancer awareness and preventive measures. Good morning, Associate Professor Dr. Sanjay Warrior.
Thanks, Selvi. Good morning and thanks for having me.
It's a great pleasure talking to you today about the breast cancer and its preventive measures. When I actually go through your writing, I came up with this phrase which really attracted me. Health is much more important than anything else. If you don't have your health, you don't have much at all. That was really impressive. So being said that, is breast cancer preventable? And how important it is for every South Asian woman in understanding the risk of developing breast cancer?
Yeah, I think end of the day, when we talk about cancers, and my speciality is breast, we break down factors and ultimately it's something that's causing the cancer. But when we think about factors, we generally think about things that we can change and things that we probably can't. The words we use for that are modifiable or non-modifiable factors. So with regards to non-modifiable factors, there are things you can't change, and that include being female, getting older, age and being female or sex are two of the biggest factors and hard to do anything about that. The third one is if there's a known genetic predisposition. Some people know, some don't, but your genes ultimately do impact your risk of developing cancer. And the other one is actually the natural way that your breast looks is actually a non-independent factor when we talk about density of the breast. And that's a term we use when we look at a mammogram, how much collagen versus fat, the composition of the breast. And they're things that you can't really change. They are what you are. And ultimately, from there, we then delve into the factors that potentially make an incremental difference. And if you're already at high risk in those other factors, there may be things that you adapt in the modifiable factors. These include simple things like hormonal exposures over a long period of time. So that's why, as a breast surgeon, we're often asking when we see a patient when they first started having periods, when menopause was, how many children they've had, and whether or not they've been on hormone replacement treatment. And then from there, we talk about other things that can potentially impact, such as alcohol consumption. So there's no doubt that chronic alcohol use at moderate to increased levels can lead to a significant, at least when we look at epidemiological studies, it does increase your risk of breast cancer and also obviously other cancers such as liver cancer.
So the modifiable factors, how can we reduce the risk of developing breast cancer?
So I think the reality is moderation with anything. But like when we talk about reducing the amount of alcohol consumption, when we talk about, you know, exercise, it makes a difference, I think. And how it works is basically the microenvironment around the cancer. The analogy I use is when you look at Superman. Superman, when he's on Krypton, he has no powers. But then when he comes to Earth, he suddenly has better gravitational forces for him. He has better nutrition, so he grows and he's able to fly. So in the same way, a cancer, part of it's about targeting the cancer, but part of it's the microenvironment of the cancer. So when we talk about exercise, when we talk about obesity, when we talk about stress, which is hard to measure, alcohol, these all potentially add up. Estrogen exposures. So it's about developing a lifestyle that reduces your risk. It won't eliminate the risk of breast cancer, but it will make a difference. And it's not about doing it over a week, potentially living a healthy lifestyle over a long period of time. And that's when you start to see chronic changes in a positive way, I think. So it is about preventative measures that probably also correlate with other things such as cardiovascular risk, and just generally being healthy. But it's obviously very hard to take these on when, you know, often as the female in the family, you're the nucleus of the family, often looking after children, often looking after the husband and looking after other people. So it's harder often to prioritise one's own health. It makes a big difference, I think. And we see it a lot in the South Asian community, no doubt.
Yeah, so other than looking after the children and husband, we have to look after ourselves as well as a woman. So that's really very important. So let's talk about the screening process. So when is it advisable to start mammogram screening for South Asian women particularly?
Yeah, so we used to say 50 for screening, but I would definitely recommend at least breast screening from 40. And that is part of our breast screen program now, where you can go and have breast screening every couple of years from 40. And then from 50 it's to 74, it's like almost compulsory going to the breast screen program if you're sticking with government regulations. But we would strongly recommend from 40. Now, the other bit with it is that there's no real umbrella net when somebody's less than 40 years of age. And yes, it's less common, but it still makes up close to 10% of our cancers that we see, breast cancers we see. So it's not uncommon for me to see females less than 40 presenting with breast cancer. And in that group, there may be reasons for it, but we also see patients that don't have genetic mutations presenting with early breast cancers due to probably cumulative impact of factors. So basically, we would strongly recommend at least self-checking below 40. And what do you do on that front? We would definitely recommend looking at the breast when you're alone. It takes about 5 minutes, lifting your arm up and then feeling with the other hand, making sure you're covering the breast, the armpit, and the nipple and the areolar complex. So you have an idea of what your breasts feel like, and then you can then basically know what to track with time if you notice changes. For somebody who's premenopausal, it's often difficult to know when to do it, but we'd generally recommend from the start of the new menstrual cycle, probably 14 days after, 10 to 14 days after. And then in somebody's postmenopausal, just wanting to check between screening, I generally say pick a day, and often the first of the month is an easy day to remember. And the catch line for that is look, lift, feel.
So why is it important, Dr. Warrior, to do mammogram screening every 2 years? Why is it important?
I think ultimately there are a group that may need it annually, but doing it every 2 years as per, you know, government regulations is generally a minimum. It is because cancers can develop in the intervening period. Probably just coming back a step, I guess the fact that we know that cancers develop from something small to something bigger, and still the biggest impactor for outcome for our patients is when we pick up the cancer. So we've got improvements in treatments, but the earlier we pick it up, and ideally if we can pick it up before it has left the lymph nodes and gone to the rest of the body, which we call stage four, then we know we can have good outcomes for our patients. So ultimately, we are always, as somebody who's on the coalface of management, if we can see somebody who presents with an early breast cancer, yes, it's upsetting to present, but at least by detecting it, we can get them through their treatments and hopefully get them on to, onto their life, moving on from the diagnosis.
Yep, good. So what should we expect in mammogram screening outcome? That is, the tumor, if they found a tumor in the mammogram screening, is it possible it always will be malignant?
Basically, we talk about changes on a mammogram screening, and they can be either a lump or calcium, which we see on a mammogram. And often calcium is a reflection of precancerous change. And these are changes that happen before it turns into a cancer, whereas some tumours just present as cancers and they will present with a lump. And we also see changes that we're not sure about on the mammogram. And then after workup, sometimes we do ultrasounds and oftenly, and then do biopsies. And if we notice something that we're not sure about, we generally would biopsy it to prove that it's not a cancer. So we've got benign changes we'll pick up often, But generally, the idea with our recall system through mammograms through breast screen is we've got two independent radiologists reading the mammogram, and so they're able to discern which are the ones that potentially need biopsies and what can be potentially left alone.
BRCA1 is a cancer protection gene that helps to protect against breast and ovarian cancer, isn't it? So can we avoid breast or ovarian cancer by finding the BRCA1 gene mutation? And who must be compulsory doing this genetic test to find the risk of carrying the mutation?
Coming back a step, like the BRCA1 and 2 genes, they're interesting genes. They're very different genes. I think basically, even though they have the same terminology, really the only thing they share in common is that they share the BRCA name. But ultimately, they're two independent genes. One often presents early with high-risk triple-negative tumours, and that's the BRCA1 gene. The BRCA2 gene, in fact, most commonly the phenotype of breast cancer a patient will present with is a hormone-positive, high-risk hormone-positive tumour. So there is a subtlety in difference there. But on top of that, there is an associated risk of, like you mentioned, Sylvie, of ovarian cancer with these genes. And ultimately, I think we have an umbrella net for trying to understand who is at risk of carrying a faulty gene and looking for a variant of significance through genetic testing, which is often done via a blood test that's sent into a lab, and then they will test for these genes. When we're talking about who should we test, there's often triggers for it. So we can break it up into patients that either have a breast cancer or don't have a breast cancer. So in a patient that doesn't have a breast cancer, that presents, often the trigger for them wanting testing is because of their family history. And they may be somebody who's have a known mutation in the family, such as their mother having breast cancer with a known mutation, and they would definitely go through counselling to understand the pros and cons of testing. There are others that may not have a known mutation but may have a strong family history, which is commonly two or more family members with breast cancer, and we would generally recommend testing. It's a slightly more complex than that, but if we were to flip to the group who have a cancer when they're diagnosed with a breast cancer, this group now, if in the past it used to be different, but now if you're less than 40 and you're diagnosed with a breast cancer, we would generally recommend mainstream testing, which is testing at the time of diagnosis, and we would test for these genes. Another buzzword that we are now using, if you have a particular type of cancer that doesn't have a receptor on it, that we call a triple negative cancer. So everyone who has a triple negative tumour who's less than 60 would be tested, and there's no doubt about that. But if you have a family member who's had breast cancer, just one, and you have a triple negative breast cancer and you're above 60, then we would generally test. But the recommendations have changed slightly because we now have other treatments associated with this particular breast cancer. So now we can actually test anybody with a triple negative breast cancer if we give them chemotherapy first, and potentially then at the end, if they have residual disease, they would, if they're known to have a gene positive tumour, we can give them another drug after chemotherapy and after surgery, which is a specific drug that works really well in this particular group of patients that we call PARP inhibitors.
So if we find this gene mutation earlier, before one person got a cancer, if they find the gene mutation before that, and if they did any preventive measures like, removing the breast tissues, ovaries and such that, is it possible to avoid getting the cancer?
Yeah, so that's the idea. I think ultimately it's a risk-reducing, not risk-eliminating procedure, that, by taking that approach. So if there are varying ways to approach it, but if you have a known gene mutation that's been detected through family history and you've been tested and you've got a BRCA mutation, for instance, but there are other genes as well, what we'd recommend is having a discussion about potential pathways for risk reduction. And that may include increased surveillance, including MRI annually. Yeah, and particularly, the advantage of potential surgery is that you're reducing the likelihood of having a cancer diagnosis, as you've mentioned, Sylvie. And why that's important is for some people that they're taking on surgery, but they're reducing the likelihood of having to have chemotherapy as one of their treatments, which can be quite, you know, impact the body. So by, yes, they're being aggressive by taking on the surgery, but they're avoiding potential other treatments or sequelae of treatments, such as chemotherapy. And then we can talk about the types of operations we do to reduce that risk.
Thank you, Dr. Warrior, for your valuable time and clear explanation about breast cancer and its preventive measure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sylvie. Have a great day. And it's good that this messaging is getting out so people can look at this as a potential disease that has aspects that you can't prevent and things that we can do to reduce the likelihood of, one, developing it, but number two, ways to and mechanisms to, if you are going to be diagnosed, hopefully being picked up early on. Thank you.
Thank you.